This is one of my favorite topics, I have to admit. It's one that I've been asking questions about for years and years, almost since I began preaching, not long after I got out of high school, I guess. Roe v. Wade occurred around 74, and for those of you that are younger, yes, I'm very old. But I've been considering the value of human life for a long time, and I especially like it set in the context of authentic Christianity. Because that begs us to ask the question, well, is there a Christianity that's not authentic? And indeed there is. There's all kinds of falseness out there of which we ought to be very aware. And therefore, it is a very vital topic, particularly today, because it would seem to me that people are looking in all the wrong places when it comes to respect for human life. I still struggle with the notion of asking atheists or agnostics in a godless secular world that we live in here in America to talk about value in human life. And our philosophers and our doctors in these wonderful universities go on and expound about humanity and human. And I wonder about those atheistic and agnostic professors who really believe foundationally that we are no more than glorified cockroaches. Having crawled out of the primordial slime, we've made up our own moral system, and now they're going to tell me that I have value. And we have people quote them as though that's some kind of a authoritative bit of information. I'm stunned. I don't understand why it is that anyone would look for authentic Christian value, respect for life from sources such as that. And it also causes me to ponder and puzzle a bit when people began to quote in tons and tons of denominationalists about the value of life from the Christian perspective. We're having struggles with what is good. We're having struggles with salvation, and they're going to tell me about my value to God. I mean, we can't get settled on the issue of salvation, how it is that we're saved. They can't understand plain verses like Mark 16 and 16. I'm not really going to go into details about human life and the depth of that discussion if they can't understand something so plain. Likewise, and it still puzzles me, and sometimes I think we are guilty of this very same thing, of calling things that are bad good. Let's not confuse Christianity with general morality. Let's understand that there are many quote-unquote good people out there that are not really that good. When they promote things under the banner or the rubric of something that is wrong, it's not good. It might, at a moment of time, suffice to help some physical thing that's going on in our life, but in the long run, it's not good. I still go back to Matthew 7, 22, 23. In 21, he says, not everybody is going to be saved. You've got to do his will. But in 22, what is the plea? Look at all the good works we've done. And what does Jesus say? Not. That's Jeff's PC version. I'm still struggling with the PC thing, as you will notice as we go through this. But no, Jesus said, depart from me, you workers of iniquity. You're not good. And we look to them as an authority on something so foundational in our existence as life and respect for life. In fact, it kind of annoys me just to get with some Christians whose lives betray their real loyalties. I really appreciated Barry's comments a while ago about application. In fact, I intend tonight to challenge you with questions, and I realize that on occasion challenges will be a little uncomfortable. For that, I apologize if I don't phrase it right, but I do not apologize for the truth, and I tend to be a little bit blunt, so bear with me. I still have enough hick in West Texas in me, hill country, that I tend to say exactly what I believe the text means. And I even fall into the sarcasm thing once in a while. Not that I would ever use sarcasm, but I do sometimes use sarcasm like Elijah to point out the fact that people are just not thinking. How is it when in 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 11, we read that the Corinthians were a certain way, but now you've been washed, sanctified. Now you've been redeemed, justified. You're different than what you were. And yet Christians tend to continue to live the way the world lives. And then we wonder why our society, full of agnostics and atheists and secularists, full of denominationalists who have departed from the truth completely, full of members of the church who really don't believe it and don't live it, would allow something like Tereshevo to happen. I don't think it's any big surprise, honestly. In fact, some time ago in 1985, author Arthur Porges wrote a fiction story entitled 1.98. That's apparently what the human body is worth, $1.98. Unfortunately, after this incident with Tereshevo, I believe there has been an economic downturn. And we wonder why. I don't. I know why. I've been preaching it. You've probably been hearing it. And my challenge to you is, why is it still that way? Because let me guarantee you, this notion of respect for life is not going to change until we become authentic Christians. It's not a new problem. There's nothing new under the sun. As a matter of fact, when you read Isaiah 59:14, we find that this kind of thing was constant. In fact, this could be right out of the pages of the Colorado Supreme Court judgment just recently. Judgment is turned away backward, and justice standeth afar off. For truth is fallen in the street, and equity cannot enter. And here's the key. Yea, truth faileth, and he that departeth from evil maketh himself a prey. And the Lord saw it, and it displeased him that there was no judgment. Now, that's what we're looking at today. That's where we are in our society today. And before we throw up our hands or wring our hands and almost giving up on the circumstance, let's understand this is not a new thing. This is an ongoing problem with humanity. And when it changes when God's people grow a spine. When they begin to stand up and make themselves heard, when they do not fall for the PC toleration that is so popular today in our society. In fact, I think that's what I'll address momentarily, because I really believe that's where our serious problem is. We no longer stand for truth. We'll tolerate the truth when it shows up on occasion, but we don't stand for the truth. And therein lies the big problem. America has dived into religious pluralism. In fact, I was so thrilled to hear Tim Ayers earlier today use the term syncretism. I've been accused of using big words, and being the hick that I am, they know it doesn't fit. So it was great to hear him use that, because I was going to use that. Basically, syncretism is that pluralism that he talked about, where you pick and choose from ideas from religions, various religions, because the foundation, of course, is they're all equal, and you put them all together, amalgamate them, mush them together, and then you come up with something and say, this is the truth. And that's what we've become in our society. The very notion that we would stand up in this country and say Jesus is the way and there is no other way automatically puts you on the defensive very often. That's what we live in today. We've gotten to the point where a Ten Commandments statue on a courthouse lawn is reason for prosecution. Where at the same time government funds are used to tear small human children from the womb, piece at a time, and put them in a stainless steel bowl so that you can be sure you got every piece from the mother's womb. And then you throw it in the trash can, unless, of course, you want to harvest body parts or stem cells for those who are more productive in society. And so we see that respect for life is basically void. Your respect is based not on an intrinsic value that you have, but on whether or not you're useful. And my question has always been, who determines whether you're useful or not? You know, I've struggled with that for a long time, and I still wonder why we have come to this point in our country. And I believe it's because Christians have failed to stand up when they should have. Anytime you separate God from humanity, you're going to have a failure in a respect for life. As a matter of fact, if you go back to Genesis and you look at Genesis, the first chapter and the 26th verse, my question would be, if Genesis is a myth, where do you find value in humanity anywhere? At the very basis and the foundation of our beginnings from God, we have a value. But you know, in PC-tolerant America today, we have taken from various and sundry other religions now, and it has become so prevalent in our society that it doesn't surprise me at all that human life has no real value. There's no respect for life. Let's take, for instance, as an example, the Eastern mysticism that has invaded society today in the forms of things like New Age. People are worried more about their chi than their kids. If somebody has an accident, it's just bad karma. The compassion is gone. You notice how those kinds of things shift when you take away God. All of a sudden, what you're caught up in is a regurgitation of existence of life in some circular form where when you die, you come back as something else, hopefully a cow in India, or you haven't got a prayer. But nevertheless, you go in this circle. It's a hopeless circle of life. Oh, and where have we heard that circle of life? Yes, they're training our children. In The Lion King, that's exactly what they talk about. Don't kid yourself. Hollywood's knee-deep in this, and I'll hammer them a little later in this lesson. But certainly, we're training our children from this high to have this Eastern mysticism mentality, where we are a part of this great big picture of the world. Separate and apart? No, not at all. As God had stated it, He made us, and He was special. He made us in His image, and we have this spark, a divine spark within us. No, no, nothing like that. We're just a part of the whole. So it's no wonder then that it's all right to abort children while we go and scream and cry because the baby seals have been, damaged. I saw footage many years ago, back when Greenpeace was starting and very popular. And again, this is sarcasm, may not go over well, be tasteless, but hang with me here. But they had this deal about this little seal, and they made this big fuss, and of course the liberal press was all over it with cameras from every angle. You saw everything about that seal that could possibly be seen. They had been rescued from the evil oil companies, and all the oil was all over him, and they cleaned him up, and they had this big day. They went out to the beach, and they went to throw him in the ocean, and out goes the seal, and this killer whale comes up. Now, that put a pall on the group. I mean, everything would just like that. It's gone. I don't understand how people cannot see that when you buy into the Eastern mysticism where we're just one part of a big whole, how we have no value. If you kill cows to eat them, why can't you do that with humans? You see where... Actually, some of our society is being rather logical about this. In error, no doubt, but they're being logical. Don't pick on their thinking, pick on the root problem. They have separated themselves from God. They have bought into false religions like Eastern mysticism. And so everything comes down to this. If you've got a social problem, the legitimate answer is get rid of it. And it tickles me pink now that it's getting real serious, not that there's anything fun or joyous about it. But, for the longest time I had people tell me in my preaching career over the past 20-plus years, abortion is a young person's problem. Oh, how deluded can you be? Please, elderly people, it is those who survive that mentality, that abortion era where we have killed thousands upon thousands of children who are going to be the ones standing over you and pulling your plug. It's getting serious for you, too. Euthanasia is a serious thing. And it all boils down to a total disrespect of life. I was watching the kid's cartoon here the other day. It made him change it, upset him. He'll deal with it. It was some kind of Japanese cartoon trying to infuse Eastern mysticism in them, the value of an individual and honorable death. Oh, yes, in the Shinto religion, you see, if things go awry and you're responsible, instead of trying to fix the problem or taking the consequences from a society that deals out justice, you commit suicide. It's called seppuku. I can't pronounce them right. Bear with me. Harikari. Anyway, it's a symbolic disembowel. The samurai always did this. They were the elite warrior class of Japan. And so you sit down and very ceremoniously just open yourself up. In fact is, we saw the beginnings of this, if you'll recall some of the footage on TV, when there were revolts and rebellions against the Vietnam War, and these Buddhist monks would go out, do you remember what I'm talking about? Go out and sit down on the corners of some busy thoroughfare and pour gas all over themselves and give new meaning to, hey buddy, give me a light. Burn themselves right there. There's no respect for life, none whatsoever. I mean, especially considering if you die now, you're just coming back to something else later. Is it any wonder we're where we're at? You can go to the other end of the spectrum, at least what I would like to think is the other end of the spectrum, with popular religions like Islam. the fastest growing religion in America today. And I don't understand that, because they have no value, no respect at all for life. It is a religion of hate and fear. It is motivated by revenge. They're still sore about the Crusades, and I'll nail that one in a minute. They're still sore about that, and so they're getting revenge, and that's what it's all about. And it really went all over me when our president, whom I support most of the time, our president gets up and talks about it being a religion of peace. It's not a religion of peace, it's a religion of hate. Yeah, you can see I really have problems with PC, but folks, we need to tell it like it is. We need to understand from where they come. You'll look in the manuscript and you'll see the quotes I have lifted from their own religious book. And what it is, basically, is a might makes right religion. If I can squelch you, I will. If I can, I'll tolerate you. But I will always be there to undermine you, and our country is tolerating that. You read in the Quran, and it is not glorious by any stretch of the imagination, even as a man-made document. Quran chapter Surah 2, verse 244, then fight in the cause of Allah. Well, that sounds all fine and well till he starts defining it later on. Then fight and slay the pagans wherever you find them. They want to kill you. Don't make any bones about it. Don't soft pedal it. Islam is out to conquer the world. If you don't convert, they're more than happy to kill you. Fight those who believe not in Allah nor the last day. In fact, one of the experts on Islam concedes, he says, the hadith of Islam, and that's all the sayings and doings supposedly of Muhammad, which means, of course, if he did them and he said them, that's right, and you can follow him and you can do that. He says the hadith of Islam, the meaning of all this, he says, you give approval for violence against both infidels and those who leave Islam as their native or chosen religion. In other words, not only are we killing infidels, but if anybody converts to Islam and then leaves, they kill them. And people get upset in Christianity about disfellowshipping. You know? I tell you, there's an irony in this, and I don't understand this. Because I know Salman Rushdie doesn't think Islam is a peaceful religion. But you know, I don't understand something here. Why is it that this toleration is being particularly promoted by the knotheads over in Hollywood? I don't understand that, because do you realize that what really makes the imams, their holy guys, you know what really makes them mad? Is the debauchery and the ugliness of our society coming out of Hollywood. All of the sex and the violence and the gratuitous, you know, debauchery, that's what makes them mad. And I thought, you know, it really would be ironic if Islam took over America. It wouldn't be pleasant. And you and I as Christians would be persecuted, at least stifled, that we might be tolerated as people of the book, as they like to call us. But you know what they're going to do? The first thing they're going to do is go hang half of L.A. and kick the rest off into the ocean. The very people who are trying to be so PC about them are the very ones creating the circumstances we're in right now. And of course, my challenge, why are we supporting that? Why are we supporting that? I don't understand that, but I know this. On the other side of the picture stands Christianity, authentic Christianity. And I like that phrase, because there are fake Christianities out there. And the first thing I would say is, as Christians, we do not have authority, if I disagree with someone religiously, to kill you, which Islam will. I don't have that authority, you see. Now, don't go quoting the Crusades to me, because we should not confuse Catholicism with Christianity. The two are nothing at all alike. And I mean no offense to anyone who may be Catholic, but you go to your history. You look it up. As one guy said in the title of his article, the head of the church is not dead. He is alive and reigning now. And he is no use for the gold embroidered suits that men on earth have who claim to be God on earth. I can tell you for a fact, the Crusades were an embarrassment to anyone and everyone who called themselves quote-unquote Christians. The history of it was, well, it was just genocide, basically. And I can't really say, honestly, that I blame Muslims for being angry at what happened. I don't justify what they're doing, don't get me wrong, but I'd be angry too. if I had been subject to some of the abuses and tragedies that occurred there. No, authentic Christianity is such that we understand Jesus saying things like, love your enemy, Matthew 5:43-48. Love your enemy. Now, I'm not talking about run up and hug him. He's liable to stab you in the back. That's not what that means. Love your enemy. Look out for them. Care for them. Treat them kind. Look out for their best interests. That is totally on the other side. And why is that? Because they are a soul, a life. They are valuable. There's nothing like them on the face of the planet. In fact, is we're told by Christ that when we do our battle, when we do struggle and fighting and so forth, our warfare is not of this earth, Paul says, 2 Corinthians 10:3-5. As a matter of fact, our warfare is not carnal. We don't fight in a carnal fashion. If someone disagrees with me, that is their prerogative, that is their freedom, that is their choice. If someone is determined to go to hell, they can go. And as sad as that may be, I have no right to force them to convert. That is so opposite of the world religions that we see, where apathy and force reign. Christianity is unique because we are special. Authentic Christianity goes back to its root in the book of Beginnings, which is not a myth. Genesis is history. It is God's word telling us who we are and what we are about and where we are going. It tells us that in Genesis 1:26, we were made in God's image. It's very frustrating when I hear people talk about themselves in such a derisive, negative way of their worthlessness and how they can't do anything right and everything's horrible. I can guarantee you that depression could be stomped out by and large, except for the obviously biological problems people sometimes have. But I mean psychosomatically and psychologically, you could stomp it out if people would just go to the book and look and see how valuable you are to God. He made you special. He put you in charge of the earth. He gave you dominion over everything. You're not like the rest of creation. You didn't generate your own moral standards. God set them out for you because He created you and knows what's best for you. You have innate value that cannot be taken away, even if you're apathetic, even if you don't believe it, even if you don't like it. It doesn't matter. That value is there. And if you don't like it and I understand it, there's a way I will treat you because I am authentic in my Christian respect for life. Now, you can't tell me that's a bad thing for society. And I still puzzle at why we tolerate Islam and we vilify Christianity left and right because it's terrible and horrible. And you look at the very premise upon which they're based. I don't understand that. I just think it's a problem where people are not thinking. They're not thinking. In fact, you're so special that God sent His only begotten Son. And it's not as though He sent His Son to come down here and be king and rule over you and tell you everything to do and press you down and suppress you and give you grief and cause your life to be miserable. No, quite the contrary. He left heaven, Philippians 2:5, the glories of heaven, which you and I really don't understand in its fullest. Can't till we get there. There are just some things, folks, beyond our physical, carnal mind. We just don't grasp it all. When you start talking about streets paved with gold, I know heaven's out of my league of cognizance. It's just way too beautiful. And He left that. But not only that, He left that and He came down and He took on the form of a human, but not just any human, a lowly carpenter's son, basically. And in doing so, He took on a life of labor and suppression. He came down knowing full well that His own would not receive Him. Oh, it wasn't an accident that Jesus died, believe me. The Scriptures speak all throughout the Old Testament prophesying the fact that His own would reject Him, He would be crucified, in detail in Isaiah 53. There was no doubt about the fact that Jesus came expecting to be rejected. And then He died. But He didn't just die. He died one of the most terrible, horrifying deaths you can think of. And lacking drama, I won't go through it, but it's ugly. Read a good book on how crucifixion really affects you. It'll turn your stomach. Jesus did that for you. That's what kind of value you have. That's how important you are. And because you have that innate value, it doesn't matter whether or not you believe it or accept it or like it or dislike it. All that is irrelevant. You have that innately. And it's such a far cry from our society, who looks at society in a function mode and says, well, how can they contribute? If they can't contribute, you pull the tube. And it doesn't surprise me at all, coming from where we came from. I get frustrated. In fact, I got an ugly note here the other day. I wrote an article about chickens in the local bulletin and about an organization, PETA, People Eating Tasty Animals. No, that's the other one. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. And I'm not for animal abuse at all, okay? But in a book by Michael Savage, he points out the fallacy of comparing chickens in a coop ready for slaughter and humans, Jews, being murdered. I really don't think they thought that one through. I really don't. To equate the two, well, basically what you're saying is murdering chickens, and that's what you got, is murdering chickens, is the same thing as murdering 6 million Jews. I don't know where that comes from, other than the fact that people have left God and they don't recognize the connection between God and humanity. Because the further away from that connection, the less respect for life that you have. I don't believe our society is doing any different than any other society that's ever had a long history, such as America's had. I believe we're doing the same kind of things that Rome did, Greece did. You go on back to other cultures, the same kind of deal. When you leave God, you leave the value of your own self. And you get into things like this Colorado. Let's go ahead and talk about the Colorado Supreme Court decision, where they decided, since some of the jurors looked at the Bible, then obviously they've been prejudiced and their decision can't be respected. My question is, what do you look at? What is your standard, your moral standard of how life fits in the big scheme of things? What do you use to judge whether or not someone should live or should not, or should die? In fact, the old argument that's been used about it being capital punishment being corporate death penalty, a corporate death penalty or a corporate murder, which is what they call death penalty, doesn't hold water if you read Genesis 9 and 6. Oh, yeah, I forgot. Genesis is myth. Oh, yeah. But if you think it's real and you think it's serious and it's history, you go back to Genesis 9, 6 and you read there that, you know, when a man kills someone else, by man his blood will be shed. Now, let's think about this for just a minute. What this tells us is that life has value. And capital punishment is not legalized murder. No, quite the contrary. What it does is serve as a deterrent to murder, or a show that a society has respect for life. Because I do not at will have the right to go out just because I don't like the wart on your nose. Not that even if you have a wart on your nose, but if I don't happen to like it, I can just go out and kill you for no reason. You do not have that right. And society as a whole, who respects life, says you don't have that right and you will die because you've done that. Because we respect life. It's just the opposite of what we're being told by the press. We have value as Christians, as human beings, and we have a responsibility because of that value. Now, this is where the rubber meets the road, isn't it? You know, we've got responsibility because life has value. We fail in America to deify, to raise up, to respect, to recognize the value that God has put in us. And we've done that by not voting. That's a very practical thing. We can go out and vote. And I'm going to make somebody mad here, but you know, I've been known to do that before. When you look at the candidates you vote for and they vote for tearing children from a womb, I would suggest you reconsider who you vote for. I'm not talking Democrat, Republican, or Greenpeace, or whoever. I don't care. But the guy wants to kill children, don't vote for him. It's crazy. I think we need to stand up en masse and go into our schools and take the trash out and put something decent in. And I can appreciate the battles we're going to fight in trying to do that. In fact, some have just flat give up and decided we're going to homeschool or we're going to get a private school going. Those are great alternatives. But folks, when it comes right down to it, how many can afford private school? How many actually do homeschool? And while the numbers are growing, I would say the proportion is minimal. And just because your children happen to be in private school or your children happen to be in homeschool does not mean that there are thousands upon thousands of children in public schools for which you pay tax dollars that are still teaching garbage to those kids. We're just going to stand by and say, well, my kid's not being taught that. That's a cop-out. We need to be activists. We need to be involved. And I'll tell you why, because there are a lot of countries in which you have no right to be involved. And we have that right. I love the comment that was made earlier, and I can't remember. I think it was Brother Meadows that made the comment about the church that was apathetic. Only time that God is ever spoken of as being sick, where he vomited them out. That impacted me. I'm going home to preach a sermon on that one. Folks, it's apathetic Christians that has got us to the place we're at right now. It's people who have sat in the secure confines of this nice building that we have with the comfort of knowing all of us are like-minded. We've missed the purpose of our worship and our assembling here. It's not to, you know, reinvent ourselves. It's by entertainment. It's not for our pleasure. It's to come in here and get boosted up to go out there and do what we're supposed to be doing. That's what this is for today. Not here to stroke you and make you feel better about your Christianity. I'm here to challenge you to go do something. Our society is dying. We stand by and we wring our hands. The only fix we have for this society is who you're looking at right here. Don't expect our denominational friends to do that. They don't know what good is. Don't expect agnostics and atheists and people who have no respect for God at all to come out and all of a sudden have some epiphany about how valuable life is. Not going to happen. You and I are going to be the one that change our society. And God help us if we don't. There was a candid discussion on Court TV not too long ago between author Wesley Smith and bioethicist Bill Allen. Smith asks, Bill, do you think Terry Schiavo is a person? Allen says, no, I do not. I think having awareness is an essential criterion for personhood. John Leo, in his article, End of an Affair, in the U.S. News and World Report, correctly drew these conclusions. He said, fetuses, that's children in the womb, by the way, babies and Alzheimer's patients are only minimally aware and might not fit this definition of personhood, and so would have no claim to our protection. Tighter definitions of personhood expand the number of humans who can be killed without blame or harvested for their organs while they are still alive. And you want to talk about a nightmare? That's where we are. And we, as a globe, were once there, as Hitler put into law these very things. I know Americans, with their disgust of what went on in World War II and the Nazi movement, don't like being compared to that. But remove the blinders from your eyes, if you would please, and recognize that's where America is. A lot of America had no problem with starving a woman to death. They have no problem with ripping children from the womb. They have no respect for life. And pretty soon, some of you older folks are going to come close face to face with that very fact. The only fix we have, folks, is authentic Christianity. That's it. And if we don't grow, if we don't work with our neighbors in evangelism, if we don't do everything in our power to plant and water that God might give the increase, we are destined for a failure in this country. And then the church will be pruned. Because only those willing to die for the Lord will be left. If you're not a Christian this evening, it's a tough one to sell. Because what you are looking to is persecution. You're going to be the minority. You're going to be vilified when you have the best of intentions and motives. And when it seems as plain as the nose on your face that this makes sense. And people who are not smart are going to run right over you. But if you want that kind of a life that lives this life, not for this life, but for the next, because we have value, because God takes care of us, and in the end, God has a place for us so wonderful we can't even put it in words well enough to really describe it fully. That's what you need to do this evening, is become an authentic Christian. You can do that by becoming Christian. That means to believe and repent, confess your sins, to be baptized into Christ, rise and walk in newness of life. That means a commitment for the rest of your life to what very likely will be a hard life. If you're a member of the body of Christ and you have not been faithful, you need, if it's a public thing, you need to come forward. But the real invitation I want to offer you, because I want to challenge you, if you have not been active in your society, if you have not been making changes in those around you, then I invite you to change your life. Take the blinders off and see how things really are and become adamant about the value of life and defend it. I invite you as we stand and we sing.